You know what I love about baseball? There's a game every single day. That's not a complaint. That's a gift. And right now you've got playoff basketball and playoff hockey running alongside the everyday of baseball. That's not a sports calendar, my friends. That's a buffet. MyBookie.ag has all of it. And if you're new, here's the deal. Use promo code ZABE on your first deposit. First bet loses, they give you the money back, up to $500 in free play. Plus $25 in casino credit just for signing up. One rollover, that's it. MyBookie.ag, promo code ZABE. Check the site for offer details and to confirm availability in your state. Bet smart, get paid. Now, go find a game. A while back, I went to get a life insurance policy the old-fashioned way. Physical exam, blood work, the whole thing. They turned me down. My numbers were bad. Now that rejection ended up being one of the best things that has happened to me. It kicked the health journey that I am still on. Down 30 pounds and counting. But I realize not everybody's in that situation. Maybe you've just been putting it off. Maybe the process always seemed like too much of a hassle. That's exactly what Ethos fixes. Ethos helps you find life insurance completely online, no medical exam, just a few simple health questions. Get a quote in seconds. Apply in minutes. Same day coverage, up to $3 million in protection. And some policies are as low as 30 bucks a month. There's no excuse to keep waiting on this one. Take 10 minutes and get covered today with life insurance through Ethos. Take 10 minutes and get covered today with life insurance through Ethos. Free quote at ethos.com/ZABE. ETHOS.com/ZABE. Application times may vary. Rates may vary.
The National Football League originated in the 1920s in rural America, then moved to the cities to flourish and prosper. But each summer, the game relives its heritage. Tiny college towns across the country witness the first bloom of the NFL season. The summer of 74 began with just a few eager rookies because the veterans were out on strike. But after 8 uneasy weeks, the strike ended, and coaches welcomed back familiar faces. There's glory in the legends of this hard muscle life, and there's poetry in each season made of sweat and strife. But now's the time to work and strain at a sport that tests the spirit and challenges the brain.
This is the ZABEcast, hosted by a Pop-Tart loving kid from the mean streets of McLean, Virginia. And since you probably have other, more important podcasts to waste your time on, screw those AirPods in tight and let's go.
Feeling down and good. Here we go. And with that, let me be the first to say, welcome everybody. Smiles. The NFL season is officially upon us. All 32 teams with both rookies and veterans required to report to camp. July 28, mark down the date. That's where it begins, as the great John Facenda, as you heard in that narration with the NFL Films vintage footage of training camp in 1974. It begins in summer. It ends in the bitter cold of the conference championship games, at least for those who are outdoors. And then it culminates in the greatest game of them all, the Super Bowl, which this year will be played Sunday, February 14th at SoFi in Inglewood, California. Did you say the February 14th? That's, son of a bitch, JR, that's Valentine's Day. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Welcome aboard, everybody, and happy July 29, 2026. Thank you for downloading. Coming up here, Kevin O'Neill, Mr. Extra Half Point, will talk some gambling with us when it comes to the NFL and season totals. Season totals in the NFL are interesting because they all fit in a certain narrow range for the most part. The lowest you're going to see is maybe 4.5, 5.5. The highest you're going to see is maybe 12.5, 13, and then everything's bunched in the middle. And then there's different prices based on the number. So you may say, oh, the Falcons over 6.5. That's a no-brainer. Okay, well, you have to pay more for it because it's not minus 110. It is minus 160 or something like that. We'll talk to Kevin O'Neill about that from the Extra Half Point coming up in just a second. But first, let's get to some of the football news, and then we are off and running. I got some feedback as well from yesterday's podcast where it was let Zabe cook. We'll start in Philly where Jalen Carter has agreed to a new massive 4-year, $152 million contract extension. The 2-time Pro Bowl game wrecker is now the highest paid defensive tackle in NFL history. The extension could be worth up to $160 million. It includes $106 guaranteed, and it's the richest ever for a defensive tackle in the history of the league in both guaranteed money and average annual value. Now, it's good work for a guy who, when he's right, is a game wrecker. It's good money. But it's just kind of funny that it's like, oh yeah, and all that other stuff, it doesn't matter. With talent, all the past stuff gets forgotten. Like spitting on Dak Prescott last year in the season opener, before the first play from scrimmage, mind you. Going onto the field saying, watch this. I'm going to spit on the other team's quarterback in his face. No one's going to see it, and that's going to set the tone for the season. Yeah, well, got kicked out of the game, and the league should have given him another game as an example. But they said, well, because he didn't actually play in the game, we're going to count him getting kicked out as his one-game suspension. Bullshit. But again, he's such a talent, they go, eh, okay. You know what? Never mind that. Also, never mind the fact that he was involved in a serious and tragic car crash in college at Georgia, in which a young recruiting staffer by the name of Chandler LaCroix lost her life. And, yeah, she was street racing Jalen Carter, who was driving a Jeep Grand Cherokee. LaCroix's vehicle reached speeds exceeding 100 miles per hour before veering off the road, hitting power lines and trees. LaCroix and offensive lineman Devin Willock died. The other passengers sustained serious injuries. For Carter's part, he had a criminal plea in which he pled no contest to misdemeanor charges of reckless driving and racing. He received 12 months probation, $1,000 fine, 80 hours of community service, and required a defensive driving course. He's one of many Georgia Bulldogs who have been very poor drivers over the years. Baker Mayfield is going to play out his deal. He and the Buccaneers could not come to an agreement on a new contract, and so therefore he says, you know what? I'll play this year, and I'll see you in free agency. And if you want to franchise tag me, well then, good luck with that. I say good for Baker Mayfield. He wants to get paid more in line with current top-tier NFL quarterbacks. And I'm imagining that is somewhere north of $50 million. And you can say, well, he's not really a $50 million quarterback. He might be a $40 or a $35 million quarterback. But guess what? The price of not having a Baker Mayfield is far more than the difference between $50 and $35 or $50 and $40. And he knows it, and his agent knows it. And because of Kirk Cousins, who walked through not one but two franchise tags, ate him on the chin like Randall Tex Cobb, franchise me, bam, thank you very much. Do it again, ba-bam, thank you very much. The franchise tag, oh, by the way, for quarterbacks would be $43.8 million. The transition tag is lower, but then you're at risk of losing him. The franchise tag projected to rise to roughly $50 million in 2027. Mayfield said in June that the two sides are nowhere close on a new deal. Buccaneers have historically moved at their own pace in negotiations. It'll only get more expensive, especially if Mayfield has a good season. Now, his security blanket is Whoopi. Mr. Evans is in San Francisco, so we'll see. But you're just not going to get away with getting a quarterback on the cheap. It just isn't going to happen. Even guys you know aren't really worth that much money, they're going to get that much money, like Kirk did and like Brock Purdy got. You just can't get away from it because this is a league that is more like a television show about quarterbacks. College football. Ohio State has signed a new landmark deal for a jersey patch that will pay the university up to $17 million a year. It's with J.P. Morgan Chase. If you ever wondered, gee, is college sports getting too big? Is the corporate money? Is the big dollars? Is it too much? Long been, and it's only getting worse. The J.P. Morgan Chase patch will be on all 36 of the Buckeyes teams and yield nearly $17 million per year, according to sources. It's believed to be one of the biggest non-apparel corporate deals in all of college sports. For their side of it, J.P. Morgan Chase Athletic Director Ross Bjork said, J.P. Morgan Chase is a global brand with deep roots in Ohio, making them a natural partner that shares our commitment to innovation, excellence, and long-term community impact. You could have just said, Mr. Bjork, they has the monies, and we want the monies. Oh, the statement goes on. Together, we have built a comprehensive and historic partnership that reflects the blah, 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 blah. $17 million. Uniform patches were approved just January in Division I as a means to generate millions of dollars to fund athletic departments. And boy, they are getting after it. But don't think that now that these deals are in place that everyone's going to be fine with the money. Money's just going to keep going up. Because the price of quarterbacks in college, currently at about $7 million for a good portal guy, is going up to $10 to $12 to $15. They'll be like a dog chasing their tail. And literally just minutes after I cut and pasted this story into my rundown for notes, Notre Dame said, whoa, 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 hold up, hold up. Notre Dame has reached a multi-year deal with SoFi and SoFi Technologies to place the financial services company brand on the Fighting Irish jerseys in every sport starting this season. 6-year deal worth $18 to as much as $20 million per year. Take that, Ohio State! Gotcha! It's believed to be the richest in college athletics history. It's the first time a corporate logo will appear in any stitch, in any corner, on any part of a Notre Dame jersey. For the traditionalists who have loved the minimal classicism of Notre Dame's uniforms, well, those uniforms were only going to go so far in today's day and age. The traditions at some point die, and they die at the bayonet tip of corporate America. You can either deal with it or not watch. Oh, you are going to watch. Okay. That's what I thought. Justin Herbert has gotten engaged. Mazel, mazel. Good things. Madison Beer has said yes, and she will be walking down the aisle looking impeccably perfect at some point in the not too distant future. The pop singer was seen together with the handsome and excellent quarterback, Justin Herbert. Don't look at his last game in New England. It was bleh. But he's really good, as you guys know. Ms. Beer and Mr. Herbert make a strikingly handsome and lovely pair. They were first spotted together in August of 25 on the set of a music video that Beer was shooting. Wow, this has gone quickly. 1 year and they're going to get married, huh? Okay. Well, when you know you found your soulmate, you found your soulmate. The rumors started immediately when the two shared a kiss on the sideline before the Chargers' Week 5 game against the Commanders. It only went further. The pair attended a Dodgers World Series game together later that autumn, and the duo was spotted sitting courtside at Crypto.com supporting the Los Angeles Lakers. Herbert also co-starred in the music video for Beer's song Lover Girl, which was released in May as part of her latest album, Lock It Deluxe. I didn't know much about Ms. Beer, and because I'm an old who wants to at least stay semi-hip, I had to go look up her deets. I first went to Google Images, and I'm like, okay. She's not quite my type. She's 27. She has clearly already had some plastic surgery. She has unnaturally plump lips and a suspiciously extra narrow nose, but maybe that's what God gave her. Whatever. She was born in Jericho, New York on Long Island, and she gained attention at age 13 when Justin Bieber shared her YouTube cover of Etta James's At Last. She's talented. Don't get me wrong about that. She's talented, and she is, she's a looker, no question. She's considered primarily pop, often blending into R&B, EDM, dance pop, and some other electronic or more introspective elements. Now, what's her best song? I don't know what her best song is. I just Googled top songs, and I came upon this one called Make You Mine. I mean, the video is a damn near porno. And it's Madison Beer dressed up as a high school cheerleader. And she is given the big googly eyes and a warm smile to an attractive young redheaded girl in the stands, purportedly a classmate. There is also a dude in the video who also has gaga eyes for Madison Beer, and the whole video intertwines between her being the object of desire by both the girl and the guy in a series of very seductive situations. I have no idea what separates somebody like her from what is no doubt a stadium full of similar type acts. They can sing well enough that when you throw them on a processor or auto-tune, they sound really good. They have the look, they have the body. Whatever they don't have, plastic surgery takes care of the rest. I don't know how these young women get chosen, but I do know this. I bet there's millions out there saying, I want to be her. Luckily for me, I've got young daughters, and so therefore, I know she's 27, but I've got young daughters, and I looked at the video. I could not watch it more than 6-7 times, probably max, before I said, this is creepy, bro. Turn this shit off. All right, enough of that. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, Kevin O'Neill, Mr. Extra Half Point, will walk me through the season totals as we are launching off from shore for the NFL season and his thoughts on how you should or maybe should not wager when it comes to over-unders on the season total for your favorite teams in the National Football League. You are listening to the Zabecast.
All right, with the NFL season basically pushing off from shore, you're probably saying to yourself, self, who's supposed to be any good this year? Well, they have already done the homework for you in Vegas, so they have a handy-dandy set of numbers. Now, making sense of the numbers, that's what our next guest is going to help us sort out. Kevin O'Neill, longtime sports handicapper, Mr. At Extra Half Point on Twitter, the last adopter of sports betting Twitter, he calls himself. Good to talk to you, my friend. How are you?
Good. It is always a pleasure to speak to you, Zabe. Seems like old times again, talking football with you, and I appreciate you having me.
Yeah. So I have done a modest amount of homework. I have handwritten
Look at that.
A single page in which I've transcribed painstakingly every over-under from the official book of this podcast, My Bookie. Use promo code ZABE, always Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo to unlock all the bonuses. Got all the over-unders plus the, the weighted odds on the over and the unders. I made sure to note where the new coaches have landed. That's in this column here. There are 10 of them. And then I have written down, Kevin, a bunch.
Algorithm.
Yeah. And then I have added basically some major narrative lines for the upcoming season. Of course, the narrative lines ahead of the season are never what the actual storylines are, because the NFL remains the greatest reality show ever invented.
How those storylines are going to change are largely based on player availability, Steve, which we have trouble forecasting. And so last year, Dr. Chow and the sports injury people, I'm going to be out in Vegas this weekend. I'm doing a presentation with them on a panel. And so I was looking at some of their stuff, and the 11 healthiest teams last year, by their metrics, 10 of them made the playoffs. So
yeah,
so that kind of tells you what we're looking at as far as trying to forecast this stuff. You can still get some value, but there's a lot of knowledge out there. And, it seems like everyone knows that what you're looking for is to bet over. You want to bet the over on teams that lost a lot of close games last year. You want to bet the under on teams that won a lot of close games in lucky fashion last year. Sort of like your Commanders. Your Commanders last year, Zabe, or your former Commanders, whoever you are with the Commanders right now. The Commanders, the previous year, they won just a slew of lucky games, setting records for fourth down conversion stats, long bombs at the end of games, et cetera, bring in a bunch of old veterans. And what happens? People get hurt. They don't have the same amount of luck. And they have a bad year. And we see that happen in the NFL year in and year out. It finally caught up with the Chiefs last year. They were setting records for winning close games. And, of course, last year they had a terrible season. They were the one team in the top 11 health-wise. I think they were like the fifth healthiest team. Even though Mahomes got hurt, they were the fifth healthiest team. And they were the only team not to make the playoffs out of the healthiest teams in the NFL.
Yeah. And then Mahomes got hurt, which is one of the storylines to start the year, which is, how healthy will Mahomes be? Will it affect his play? He tore his ACL and his LCL in early December, and the first images of him doing light work in practice has led to the inevitable overreactions about, oh, did he actually buckle on that knee on that drill, that pass he made? And I'm like, here we go. Here we go with this in training camp. So
overreactions in late July? That's shocking. It's such a busy time on the sports calendar.
I know. So the major storylines I've got for the NFL, which will conclude with Super Bowl 61 in SoFi on Valentine's Day 2027. That will be February 14th. We got 10 new head coaches. Mahomes coming off ACL. We got the Browns quarterback battle between Shador and Watson. We got Buffalo trying something different with Joe Brady replacing Sean McDermott. Mike McCarthy goes home. Aaron Rodgers vows this is the last ride this year. There's a new stadium in play. That would be Highmark in Buffalo. Daniel Jones says he could be back from his Achilles by week one. That's kind of dubious. Was Drake May a soft schedule mirage? Will Bo Nix respond well to his broken ankle? He said he's ready to go full bore in training camp. Is Fernando Mania set to sweep Las Vegas, the number one pick, Fernando Mendoza? Will Cardinals running back Jeremiah Love be proven to be worth it at number three, or a reach for a league that doesn't value running backs anymore? Can Joe Burrow last the season? He hasn't two of the last three. He's played three full seasons in his career, and he's had three half seasons. Has Detroit's window closed? The bookmakers don't quite think so. Can Jaden Daniels bounce back? How will Aaron Glenn as coach of the Jets survive? He was one of the shocking survivors as head coach this offseason. Will Caleb Williams survive the Madden curse? He is on the cover of the video game. Is Kyler Murray the fix in Minnesota? Is Kyle Shanahan's car crash a factor? And then finally, will Mike Vrabel be affected by the Rossini fallout if there is any further Rossini fallout? And then there's probably a bunch of other storylines that I did not get. Any thoughts on my basic sweep of storylines?
Do you want me to answer them in order?
No need to answer them specifically. I just was throwing out, here's the stuff that I know people are going to want to
That's a good collection. You've done well with your felt tip algorithm there in front of you. It's a lot, you know, the answers to a lot of those stories will determine how certain teams do, season win totals, season long, will they make the playoffs, yes or no, all that stuff. But of course, it all changes in an instant with health and overreaction and all that sort of thing.
All right, so I'm going to give you the highs and lows for season totals. Then we'll talk about the philosophy of betting them and basically how the odds get shifted and weighted when it comes to money coming in, because the lines on the win totals don't typically move a lot. They'll just move the payout odds. I did notice that all of the win total odds are halves. So 8.5, 9.5, 10.5. I assume, Kevin, they do that on purpose because they want everyone yielding a result.
Like the player props as well. They do not want pushes. They want that juice to be working in their favor. And, you know, people don't want pushes. People, bettors don't want pushes either.
Sure. Okay. So with that said, here are the windows. Here's the envelope of over-unders. The lowest numbers I see, at least at mybookie.com, if you have a different one, let me know. And the highest number I see, the low number is 4.5, and the high number is 11.5. The teams that are sitting at 4.5, there is the Dolphins at 4.5, and that's the only team that's at 4.5. There's a couple at 5.5, the Jets and the Browns. At 11.5 are the Ravens and the Rams. That's what I see right now looking at my felt tip algorithm.
Now, what's the money line on the Dolphins at 4.5?
All right, so the Dolphins, 4.5. Over is plus 121. Under is minus 148. So if you want to bet the under, then you're going to have to give up more in return. So they're really down on Miami.
Yeah, and actually, that under, that's a good price on the under compared to what it is elsewhere in the market. I mean, I'm looking at having to lay about 20 cents more on under 4.5 than what you're looking at right now.
The
couple books I have open that are pretty sharp shops. So I wouldn't talk. I mean, those low numbers, they're like you get this sugar high looking at them. Oh, the Dolphins are going to be terrible. But the Dolphins, I mean, have you ever seen a team lined up to tank any more aggressively and openly and obviously than the Dolphins this year?
Not really. Now, they do have new head coach Jeff Hafley. Their starting quarterback figures to be Malik Willis, who was a good backup for the Packers. I still think he's just a backup.
And he went to high school a few hundred yards from where I sit, Zabe. It's all coming together, this appearance.
Which is where? Where is that?
Roswell High School in Roswell, Georgia is where he went to high school.
Okay. All right. So when you're betting a team that is that low, you're just really hoping they get nothing going on, because in this league, even the bad teams fall into now 3 or 4 or 5 wins typically.
Yeah, they do. And it's tough to get players to tank. They have such short careers. They don't want to put out bad film. They don't want to be told to tank. They play the Jets twice. But then when you get outside of their division, the AFC East matches up against the NFC North and the AFC West. So they play a slew of tough teams. Honestly, at the number you have available to you, Steve, I wouldn't talk people out of playing under 4.5. I mean, if there's ever a team you're going to play under 4.5, they would be it. Although, you know, I'm not going out of my way to bet it, but I think based on the number you quoted me, I think the way to go, especially with some marketplace value, is that my bookie line you quoted me, I would go under 4.5.
So the Rams at 11.5 makes sense because they were right on the doorstep last year making the Super Bowl. Every year it seems like people worry about Matt Stafford's health, and then he ends up figuring out a way to play. He's kind of built like a tank. And then they add via trade Myles Garrett and Trent McDuffie at corner. And so, therefore, they are seemingly loaded on paper. And if Aaron Donald comes back, which he threatened to do, to play alongside Myles Garrett, holy shit. So I get that 11.5 on the Rams. By the way, the over on the Rams at 11.5 is -125. The plus is slight, or the under is slightly plus money, +102. So they're, the odds makers are very high on the Rams. 11.5. They can win 12 games. It's a big number in a tough division.
Yeah, it's a tough division. And you know, the NFC West teams, they play the AFC West. And I think the AFC West is shaping up to be a pretty tough division with a couple of improved teams out that way as well. They also play the NFC East, which is significantly easier. But, what I'm looking at with the Rams is how focused are they really going to be on the regular season? They're a veteran team. Are you looking at, is the quarterback really going to, if they're down, I just don't know. Some of these veteran teams, they know they're going to be there at the end. I think they're sort of a mature team. I think they're a team that's going to look to be healthy and look to be peaking at the right time. And I could definitely see them falling victim to some midseason upsets that are a little bit unexpected in some flat spots and games they're not really, excited about. A quarterback that age, quarterbacks tend to fall off a cliff when they reach a certain age. Stafford has, obviously last year played an extremely high level. Do we really think he's going to match the level he played at last year? Obviously, yeah. Their defensive talent is off the charts, but I don't think over the years you are going to make a lot of money, laying juice, betting over 12.5 in the NFL. In fact, yeah. I know that you're not going to. And the other thing is, if assuming you're not playing on credit, if you're playing in a post-up environment, if you're laying juice on something that you aren't going to be paid on for 6 months, if you're a good sports bettor and you do a lot of work and you do a lot of research, you want to have a lot of churn in your bankroll. And the one thing to keep in mind is that you're tying money up for long stretches, long stretches of time when you are betting these futures. So you really need to think you have an edge and be excited about it. I have a friend who bets, or a colleague who bets at least $50 on every single season win over and under, just as an exercise to make sure he does the work. But, I try to bet them someplace where it won't tie up my money.
Right. Right. Interesting. So you've got that bets them all, even for small amounts, just to force him to do the work.
He mentioned that to me last year, about this time last year for the first time. And I thought that was a very wise thing to do, just to make sure he pays attention and get through all
that.
The other thing about all this, Steve, is that, you've got your felt tip algorithm. I know, everyone watching this has been, focused and watching media and looking at all the previews and listening to Stephen A. Smith and listening to all the reports from camp. Listening to all the reports from camp, et cetera, et cetera. But really, what you learn the first 2 weeks of the season is more valuable than all of the postseason evaluation, all of the pre-draft, all of the draft, all the free agency, everything this summer. What they do on the field is going to be a different kettle of fish. And it's very, one thing about the summertime is you don't want to get too locked in, too locked into your opinions and be afraid to move off of them. What they do on the field in the first couple of weeks of the season is very important.
Now, when you say first couple of weeks of the season, you mean regular season, correct?
Yes. Oh God, yes. Yeah.
If you take anything you see starting right now during the preseason and make any sort of conclusions off of that, you're asking for it, because August is the month of funhouse mirrors, both with players and with teams. You think you see something, chances are it's a complete mirage. So the Rams at 11.5.
Yeah. 5 years ago, the 5 years ago, the NFL exhibition season, was the most meaningless thing in sports, and it has only gotten less meaningful since then. When they went to the full 17 game schedule, everyone just stopped playing in the preseason. And
shortened it by a game, and you had teams now saying, "Well, we're really only going to give our starters one half of one game, which is game two, not three, and then we're going to put them away until the real games begin." So you're just not seeing much of anything.
There's one little angle that tends to work most years, although it didn't work as well last year, is that if a team does not play its starting quarterback at all in the regular season, they go under their team total in week one. So they do not have good offensive performances in the first week of the season. And that is something that wins pretty much year in and year out, although it was sort of break-even-ish last year.
They go under their team total in week one, meaning their single game?
In that specific game. Under? Okay. In that specific game. If their team total is 24.5, if their team total is 27.5 in game one, they tend to go under if they don't take any snaps at all. You want them to play at least a half of football during the preseason. It really does make something of a difference.
All right. And then you've got Baltimore also at 11.5 with a new coach in Jesse Minter. The over on the Ravens is +115, so it's shaded a bit south on that 11.5 total. The under is -141. It's a pretty big number, for a team with a new head coach. But we'll see.
It is a big number for a team with a head coach. But when we talk about the divisions that they're matched up against, I find that to be very important. And I'm not looking to play teams in the AFC North. I am not looking to play them under their season win totals because they match up against two of the easier teams and easier divisions in football. They match up against the two South divisions, NFC South and AFC South. So they play every team in those two divisions, which is a little bit of a gift. It is a win total boosting gift.
No wonder they're 11.5. They play the dirty South in both sides, AFC and NFC. Okay, interesting. All right, I'm going to go division by division, and we'll just throw out a quick thought about the numbers. Let's start in the NFC East, because that traditionally is where I've always started. It's the bias of being a NFC East child growing up. Your top team is Philly, over under 10.5. The over pays plus money, +115, under -141.
All right, so. Actually, let's do this. Let's go this format. Let's go through the division. Give me, instead of me just commenting on things I don't have a big opinion on.
Yeah, let me give all the teams.
I'll give you an opinion on a team in each division.
All right, here we go. All right, to the NFC East, Philadelphia, 10.5. Dallas, 9.5. Washington and the Giants with new head coach John Harbaugh, 7.5 each. With, you know, the Giants, you got the new coach question and whether or not Jackson Dart will learn how to stay healthy and not be an idiot. Washington's big question is the bounce back factor of Jaden Daniels. They also have new coordinators on both sides of the ball. Also in Dallas, Jerry, I think, is 83 this year, and he's getting more and more antsy as he approaches death to finally see a decent team this year that goes to the Super Bowl. And Philly just seems to be the most stable bet of them all in the East.
Yeah, I think that, I think the quarterbacking will be improved a little bit in Philadelphia this year. I'm not a big fan of Hurts, but I think the whole A.J. Brown thing was kind of a big deal and the problems they had. I think both of them, their new situation is a little bit of a breath of fresh air. But I like your Commanders over a little bit. I think everything lined up against them last year. Obviously they had significant injuries. The two new coordinators is a little bit to overcome, but I like them over their win total a little bit.
Yeah, I think Washington, if they can move their defense from dead fucking last to at least middle of the pack, 15, 16, it'll feel it'll feel like a breath of fresh air. It'll feel shockingly good because the defense was so trash last year. And, of course, it's all dependent on Jaden Daniels staying upright.
I'm confident that Daniels is going to have a strong bounce back season, you know, assuming he stays healthy. Let me ask you real quick, as someone close to the scene there, what is your projection for the defense? Do you think they were as bad as they appeared to be last year, or was it sort of more injury related?
No, they were terrible in every regard. The scheme was terrible with their coordinator, who they had jettisoned, and they were not good to begin with on paper. And by the way, they got a lot of injuries on top of that. So it was a triple win.
I like that low number. I like going over a low number like that.
By the way, Gerald Wayne Jones Sr., Gerald, is his real full name. Jerry Jones is 83. So I nailed it. I got to see my Cowboys get to the Super Bowl, Kevin, before I kick the bucket. I got to see it.
Well, how about you take your failed fingerprints off of everything that happened there, which has not had an ounce of success in the past 30 years? And how about you stop being the lone GM in the history of the sport? The lone owner in the history of the
sport. GM.
Have post-game press conferences.
Yeah. Okay.
Put the circus away, Jerry.
NFC North, your top team is Detroit, 10.5. Over-under is both split at -111, so it's even either way. Then you got Green Bay at 9.5, shaded towards the over, -141. And then you've got the Bears at 9.5. which is shaded towards the under, -121. And then you've got Minnesota at 8.5. There's your NFC North.
Yeah. And, I'm going to comment on the Bears. The Bears line up to be an under, Steve. You know, they won all sorts of lucky games. Their quarterback just sort of, he really had a lot of lucky plays late in the season.
Oh, yeah.
Off the charts, third down conversion in the second half of the season, which usually, reverts to the norm. They just got all the breaks. But there's just something about the head coach there that has me concerned about knee-jerking to go under against them. And that division, they play the AFC East, and they also play the NFC South. And I think playing the NFC South is a little bit of a gift there. And with that gift, I am going to go with the Vikings over their team total. I think the quarterback situation gets fixed there this year, and it will not be with McCarthy. It will not be with last year's star. It will not be with nine. I prefer to call him nine.
Nine.
It will not be with nine. I think their free agent signee also was
Kyler Murray.
I think he was in need of a breath of fresh air. I think he's with a guy who can really get some good play out of most quarterbacks, although not nine. And with some easy wins against the NFC South, I think the Vikings are going to be improved and get some wins, and I like them over the total that you quoted.
Okay, NFC South, here we go. Top team is only 8.5, Tampa Bay. I just said before you came on, I'm like giving the news about how Baker Mayfield says he's going to play the season out, become a free agent. Franchise tag me if you want. Carolina, 7.5. New Orleans, 7.5. Atlanta, 6.5 with new coach Kevin Stefanski.
Yeah, I like a couple plays here. I kind of like the Falcons over because I think there's a level of professionalism being injected into the franchise with Stefanski that was not there in the past couple years. And for a similar Atlanta coaching staff reason, I like Tampa Bay under their season win total. Let me tell you why. I think their new offensive coordinator who comes from Atlanta, Zach Robinson, I think he's terrible. And the only reason there's no demand for him in the league, except for the fact that he happened to have good games against Tampa Bay. The past couple of years, there are a lot of points scored, a lot of points and yards run up against Tampa Bay by the Falcons, and they had their best games against Tampa Bay. And I think there's been an overreaction in Tampa Bay to hire Robinson, who, when you look at all the young quarterbacks in the league who developed in their second season, they were really looking for that from Michael Penix last year, and he did not at all. He was terrible. He did not develop at all. They had a five-game losing streak Steve, in the midst of that streak, they had a run of 3 for 33 on third down conversions.
Jesus.
And there was something great late in the season. The quote got, I happened to be in the car and I happened to listen to a show that Kirk Cousins was on. And he said, you know, they played a few good games in a row. They, you know, Falcons have a ton of offensive talent. They played a few good games in a row. And Cousins said, you know, we're finally starting to get a feel for what Zach is trying to do now that we've reached the end of his second year. And that was just a very subtle, low-key shot, like you never hear a quarterback take at a coordinator. Yeah. It got zero notice, but I think it tells you a lot about Robinson. I don't think he's the guy. Obviously, an unhappy Baker is not what you're looking for. And Baker's a guy at his age and the beating he takes. He may fall off a cliff himself.
Obviously, and how will he be without his whoopee, Mike Evans? Well, that'll be an interesting thing to see.
That will be interesting. I think I like their games under and probably their team totals under a good bit. I think their offense is going to struggle, but that will be reflected in their season win total as well.
I can't believe I'm saying this, and if I'm going to bet it, I'm going to have to hold my nose. New Orleans over 7.5 might look enticing to me. I was shocked that Tyler Shuck did not suck as bad as I was sure he was going to suck. He went 5-4 after taking over in week 9, and they had to slog through the awfulness of Spencer Rattler for the first 8 games, which he went 1-7. So if Shuck is actually not bad and they've stabilized, maybe I dabble on the over, but Jesus, it's going to make my stomach turn places.
Yeah, here's why I wouldn't do that, and because I was just so remarkably long-winded in my Tampa Bay analysis. The NFC South, they play the NFC North and the AFC North. They play a lot of good teams, and that factors into my Tampa Bay under, and I don't know that I appreciated Chuck last year. I thought they were a well-coached team. They were a nice story. They're still a talent deficit in New Orleans, and they're not a team. I wouldn't bet that over, Steve.
All right. Then to the West. This is the only division with 3 teams over double-digit wins. Rams at 11.5, Niners at 10.5, the Seattle Seahawks, your defending champs, at 10.5, and then Arizona with new coach Mike LaFleur and Jacoby Brissett, who they had to put more money into because he's like, well, if you're going to make me the starter week 1, you're going to pay me more money. They're like, God damn it. Okay, fine. Arizona is at 4.5. Arizona could be legendarily bad this year.
Yeah, they're not going to be good. And they play tough divisions out there. I'm not really, I don't know what to do about them. I do lean Rams under a little bit. I don't know if the regular season is going to be the most important part of the year for them.
Okay. Arizona, by the way, is shaded towards the under at -187 at mybookie.com. So if you want to play the under on Arizona, which is a low limbo bar, you're going to pay for it in blood. Because that's a big number, 187.
Well, I was looking for a reason. You were trying to guide me there a little bit, I think. But yeah. I was looking to find a reason to play that over. And then I went through their schedule, and there's not a lot of likely wins on that schedule.
Yeah. Okay, so that concludes the NFC. Let's go to the AFC. In the East, you've got Buffalo and New England at 10.5 each. Then the Jets at 5.5 and Miami at 4.5. Man, I'd love to hammer the Jets under again. Is there any reason to hope the Jets are going to be decent this year?
You know, they brought in some defensive talent, even though it's sort of some aging talent. They will definitely get a few turnovers, which they got almost none last year. But do you know that the Jets had one of the best special teams in like the past 30 years by DVOA?
I just remember the highlight of Aaron Glenn running down the sideline on their big return. I think it was against Tampa that one time. One of the few highlights of the entire year for the Jets. But yeah, so their special teams have been good.
As good as that was, it didn't generate them any wins. I don't know that I want a part of that. I don't really have a play in that conference.
The biggest question, Kevin, is how much of New England's success, and especially May, was based on they had a soft-ass schedule. They caught teams at their weakest. It was, you know, you play the teams that are in front of you, and they're all professional teams. There's no college teams. There's no barnstorming teams, as I like to say. But, man, it turned out to be pretty soft. So under New England could be tempting to some.
Yeah, and I understand where you're coming from there at a pretty significant level. When I remember the end of the season last year, I went through, as the Super Bowl approached, I went through their schedule this year and last year. Every single team that's not in their division on this year's schedule projects to be better than that than their non-conference teams were in on last year's schedule. Like, it's just a huge, I mean, their schedule is so easy, but the back half of the season, they were really dominating teams. And yeah. Drake May, in his second year with McDaniel, I wouldn't be surprised at all. You know, he was a runner-up for MVP. I wouldn't be surprised at all if he's even better this year. I know they're implementing more of their offense. I think A.J. Brown will be very helpful for, you know, probably for a year or two at his age. And tell me what you think about Romeo Doubs. I know you've watched him pretty closely based on your Wisconsin connections.
Yeah. Not explosive. Yeah. Good hands. He doesn't move the needle for me. On the Buffalo front, I just had to check their wide receiver chart. I mean, they're going to go out. They're rolling out Khalil Shakir, wonderful little whip-whap guy, but small. Josh Palmer, who they got from the Chargers, and DJ Moore from the Bears. Yeah. And then, of course, they got the disappointing Keon Coleman so far in his young NFL career. God damn, they got to give Josh Allen some wide receiver weapons, for God's sakes. Some real ones, please.
It's been a while, I think, since I've seen an NFL coach with as light a resume as their coach has.
As Joe Brady?
Yeah, and, you know, he's never really led a team. He's had some good, you know, right? Obviously he's had some really good quarterbacks that he's coordinated offenses for. Really good quarterbacks. And I know some people in football who were saying last year with all of Buffalo's injuries that they couldn't believe the coaching job that was done there last year. And I just don't know that you don't have a lot of experience on the with the head coach, and you're losing a premier defensive head coach. I don't know if I'm a Buffalo fan, I'm very concerned with that window closing on me. You know, if I'm going to go with something in that division, why don't we go with Buffalo under?
All right. Joe Brady not only coached, Josh Allen as their OC last year, he was also the coach of Joe Burrow at LSU. So when you say he's coached a lot of great quarterbacks, he's been riding in the lap of luxury. Okay. North, AFC North, your top team, Baltimore, 11.5. We talked about them a little bit so far. Next up is Cincinnati at 9.5. Then Pittsburgh, 8.5. Then Cleveland, 5.5. Three of the four teams in the division have new coaches. Pittsburgh with McCarthy, Baltimore with Minter, and then Cleveland with Todd Monken. I know this has nothing to do with the over-under, but damn, the quarterback situation in Cleveland is going to be fun as hell to watch because there's no good options. It's all awful.
I found myself late in the season always having one of my screens on the Cleveland game just to watch Shador, just from like a train wreck perspective.
Right.
And he would throw a little screen pass and, you know, a guy would, you know, run through the Raiders for like 60 yards and the Raiders guys are like, you know, looking at their phones at their Cancun reservations and social media, pro Shador social media just explodes like, oh, you anti Shador people. It's a funny scene there. I like, there are a lot of easy wins on their schedules. Taking on the AFC East, they all play the Jets. They all play the Dolphins.
Miami.
And taking on the NFC South. There are a lot of wins there. I look to play more unders than overs, but I think the Bengals, with the coaching continuity you mentioned, a healthier team, some defensive talent that they didn't have last year, and the quarterback, I like the over on the line that you just quoted me, Steve.
All right. Pittsburgh over 8.5 might be tempting if I believe Aaron Rodgers can make it through the season. One more year with the vibes of being back together with McCarthy, maybe that's an overplay for me, but I'm not sure.
I think not expecting anything positive out of Aaron Rodgers the past 3 years has just been good basic strategy.
Okay. On to the AFC South. Top team Houston, 9.5. Jacksonville, 8.5. Indy, 7.5. And Tennessee, 6.5 with new coach Robert Saleh. Man, I'd love to hammer the under on Tennessee. But what do you think of that division?
I know some people who like the Colts.
Really?
I just, like, smart people, people I respect like the Colts. I just can't get there with it. I mean, they were phony as could be in the first half of last season. That proved to be the case down the stretch. Although they had some pretty good core numbers based on the fact that their quarter, you know, that when they had a lot of quarterback injuries, and obviously they had Phillip Rivers, but I don't have anything in that division I really would feel, I feel all that strongly about.
Okay. And then, you know, obviously Houston's the class of the division. The arguments and the debates about the quarterback from Ohio State for the Texans, whether he's really as good, C.J. Stroud, or if he's just this or he's just that, I think are going to continue because he's just been erratic after his great second season. It's like, okay, who are you, bro? Tell me. But Houston's the top of the division at 9.5. To the West we go. Kansas City, still the top dog in total, 10.5. Wow. Denver's 9.5. Chargers are 9.5. Vegas is 5.5 with new coach Clint Kubiak.
Yeah, the everything in Denver points to a regression to the mean out there.
Really?
They play some tough teams in the NFC West. They won a number of close games last year. They have a good coach. I'm not in love with Bo Nix. I think Bo Nix is a little bit something of a managed creation, and I lean to them under their season wins total just a little bit. I think the Raiders might be respectable.
Really?
I haven't said this in a long time, but I may like the direction from a personnel and coaching perspective that they are headed in. And that's going to be an interesting story. Mendoza is going to be a really interesting story. You know, he seems like a system creation, but then you just see him, you know, just based on the story and Cignetti and stuff like that. But then you just see the throws he made all year long, just hitting guys on the hands, the clutch, his clutch gene is pretty significant. That's going to be fun to watch. Obviously, yeah. They have an issue out there in that 40% of the crowd are
is always for the visitors. Yeah, they play a lot of sort of road games.
Let's go to Vegas.
You know, yeah.
Why not?
I gotta believe Kansas City under again would be tempting. Now there's a price to pay because the under is shaded to -141. So clearly that's the way they're looking at it. And the Raiders, your over is -147 at 5.5. So the odds makers are also kind of seeing the possibilities of a slightly better Vegas team than perhaps their total is.
I was going back and forth between. I do kind of like your Kansas City under there. I saw the Broncos winning so many close games last year, and I just don't know if the Broncos, what they have, is fully sustainable.
Yeah. Also, I thought there was some talk about how the Bo Nix broken bone in his foot or ankle was not sort of standard. It was like something that they were like, this is a serious deal that's going to be an issue for him going forward. Now, he's going to be ready to go from the start of camp, they say, but still, I don't know. It's going to be interesting. Last question for you, Kevin O'Neill. You can find him on Twitter at @ExtraHalfPoint, and that's the thing. You're always looking for the extra half point. How many books move their win totals by a full win one way or the other, given that they're all landing on a half? Does anyone move their win total, or is it just they'll weight it heavier and heavier on the over versus the under?
Well, I'm looking at one book here, and you can bet every team, you know, you have their core over under, and then you have one above and one above. So based on money, you can adjust the money line. I could bet the Vikings over or under 7.5, 8.5, or 9.5 with the adjustment that you would expect with each money line. I think most
books... they're offering those three different over-unders for every team. They're saying the middle of the road one is this, 8.5. But if you want 7.5, here's the price. If you want 9.5, here's the price. And they set that at the beginning. My question is, if a team loses their starting quarterback in week two of the preseason or something crazy happens, do they ever actually move the win total, the core win total, up a point or down a point?
Yeah. When Teddy Bridgewater had that gruesome injury in training camp in Minnesota, I remember that was a significant mover.
Okay.
And you know, when you're talking about moves, everyone should have an account with your sponsor, MyBookie, simply because they are sponsoring your show.
Ding, ding, ding.
But I also wouldn't suggest that someone just lock into one specific book. They want to give themselves options. And whatever you're interested in, you likely, if you have various books, you will likely get surprisingly better prices from one book to the next. For instance, I had a buddy the other day tell me, he knows a lot about college football. He says, I really like Iowa State under 5.5 minus $1.70. So I put the word out and shopped around. There was a place sitting in Vegas, Stations was sitting in Vegas under 5.5 minus $1.30. I mean, that makes a huge, huge difference at the end of the day. So you don't want to limit yourself. You know, obviously my Twitter handle is at extra half point, suggesting that shopping is a part of my life, Steve. And I would suggest doing so with these season wins. And can I make one more season long under suggestion?
Yes.
Player props, their stat props, you know, receiving yardage, especially rushing yardage. Nothing but unders. And wait for some of these guys to get a lot of, you know, sort of get fluffed up a good bit by the media during the off season. There are years when if you just take every single skill position player and bet their season-long stat totals under 57%, 58%. Wow. Now, they seem to be moderating just a little bit. I don't see as many like, wow, that's pretty fat. I can't wait to bet that under. But I still don't see a situation where where you want to bet season-long player stat win props overs.
Isn't that because the season-long stat numbers are, generally speaking, assuming a full season of health? And so one snap, crackle, pop almost can guarantee the under?
Yeah, I mean, guy misses two games and that you're really up against it. And the other thing is people don't like to bet unders. Like people like to bet overs.
If you know why, because when it's over, Kevin, it's over.
It's over.
And the unders, you got to nurse into the house until the very last snap of the season. So nerve-wracking.
That is why I will always be focusing on underdogs and unders, because that puts me against the public. It doesn't mean it's exclusive, but right. I've got a higher bar to bet an over, and I've got a higher bar to bet a favorite than I do to bet an under and an underdog. And it's also just kind of the way I think. I think contrarian thinking is usually good in this. Whatever happened last week isn't necessarily going to happen next week. And we just packed a lot of helpful hints into a short period of time, didn't
we? We'll see if they're helpful. We packed a lot of hunches, that's for sure. Hunches and lunches for your upcoming NFL season. Kevin, won't be the last time we talk this year. Always good to interface with you. And if people want to find you on Twitter, at extra half point. Thank you, my friend.
Zabe, always a pleasure. I appreciate you having me on.
Let's talk casino for a second. MyBookie.ag has a full Las Vegas-style casino right on your phone. Blackjack, roulette, craps, slots, video poker, all of it. No flight, no parking, no guy next to you who hasn't showered since Thursday. And they have live dealer games. Real humans on camera dealing cards and spinning wheels in real time. You can watch the shuffle. It's not some random number generator. It's an actual person running an actual table, and you're sitting at it from your couch. New players get $25 in casino credit automatically with promo code ZABE just for making a deposit. Free money to try it on them. MyBookie.ag, promo code ZABE. Check the site for offer details and to confirm availability in your state. All right, let's get some feedback before we're done. This one from Mike Marks. Zabe, count me as one that definitely turned on the good doctor, Dr. Fauci. And I must admit that you had something to do with it. I'm an MD, and while I still don't agree with some of your COVID takes, parentheses, the jab did help those at risk. The data says it didn't really, but I'm not going to argue that with you. You're a doctor, sir. And working through all that mess, seeing the scans, putting central venous catheters in patients, it gives me a different perspective. I was thankful from the beginning that young people were largely spared, and I was skeptical that the draconian measures were going to do much. I myself signed the Great Barrington Declaration, well, good for you, which basically said, hey, keep things open, try to do our best to protect the old and the weak, but I'm willing to give the good doctor some space, figuring he was a scientist and someone who had to be the face of the government's response. Yeah, but that's the thing. He was a scientist, but he was also more a bureaucrat, and he was an operator, and he was and is a narcissist. However, it was a passing mention by you that had me saying, wait a minute, this guy's a fraud. I remember when he debacled the first pitch of a Nats game that he was chosen to throw out, and then proceeded to give multiple excuses for his performance. Yes, it was, if you look it up on YouTube, it was a horrible pitch. As bad as 50 Cent. And afterwards, when asked about it, Fauci didn't just say, yeah, I botched it. Or, you know what? An 81-year-old virologist doesn't spend a lot of time working on his heater. Could have said that. Instead, he said, well, I was practicing on a nearby field, and the nearby field only had 45-foot mound, not a 60-foot mound. That's why I messed up. So taking no responsibility, no accountability for his own fuck-up, as trivial as it was, and then lying about it is such bullshit. But that's who he is. It was at that point, says Mike, I realized this guy is more concerned about his image and appearance than anything else. His diaries now only confirm this. Take care, sincerely, Mike. P.S. It started in the lab, obviously with Fauci's help. P.P.S. Thanks for the Scotland Golf Tour's hookup. Had a dream trip. Ronnie Pook sold the business to Angus, who did a great job hooking us up with our guide. Colin can't wait to return. This one from John Beauregard. Hey, Zabe, love hearing about your great trip to Ireland. The wife and I are going there for the first time next May. She begrudgingly golfs with me, so we are only going to hit a few golf courses. What does begrudging golf look like exactly? Okay, here we go. I've got tee times at Doonbeg, Old Head, and Dromoland Castle, only because we're leaving out of Shannon the next day, and Adair Manor is closing to prep for the Ryder Cup. Oh, Adair Manor is so sweet, but very expensive. Wanted to see if you would recommend La Hinch more than Doonbeg. Yes, 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 yes. And any other tidbits of advice you might give a first-timer, we're staying in Doolin, Dingle, Kinsale, and Ennis. Thanks, John Beauregard. Listen, I'm not going to be your tour guide for Ireland. I've been twice. I don't have all the answers. Go to the pubs, talk to the people, have a pint, soak it all up, ask questions, enjoy it all. That's all the recommendations you really need. But as far as golf courses go, La Hinch, way better than Doonbeg, in my humble golfer's opinion. This one from Scott Doan, D-O-A-N. Zabe, longtime listener since the one-on-one sports days in the 90s. Wow, you go back. Love the daily podcast, especially your solo shows. I agree about Fauci. He should be in prison or at least sued into oblivion. That said, sorry to say, it will never happen. I didn't figure out Fauci until after I got the jab. Now, whenever I don't feel right or my normal self, I worry that it's the COVID shot. Since then, I've never trusted anything that comes out of Washington, Republican or Democrat. It's always only about two things with both parties, money and power. Money and power. I'm not sure what my country will look like in 10 years from now. Keep up the great work, though. Many thanks, Scott Doan. Yeah, of course. You should always be skeptical. You should always be going, huh, okay, really. So you say this, huh? Show me some data. Oh, you're going to be a do-your-own-research guy. Yeah, always. You kidding me? Do you know how many people blindly take medical advice and don't do any digging into it and don't realize that the lowest GPA graduate from medical school is still called doctor. Just saying. This one from Joe Metz. Zabe, I was shocked to find out that only 16 presidents have libraries. I assumed, like you did, that every one of them has one. Guess you learn something new every day. Have a great one. I thought every former president had a library. Are the 16 presidents the more recent version? I would imagine that, President Garfield doesn't have one from back in the day, but still, maybe he does. This one from Michael. He says, Zabe, tornadoes are very common in the South in March, April, and May, but in the Midwest, the upper Midwest, tornadoes are more common in June, July, and August. It just shifts north. Thank you, Michael. I said on today's show, on 105.7 The Fan with Josh Albrecht, I said, hey, this guy Reed Timmer, who is a meteorologist, who is Mr. Storm Chaser, and his bio on Twitter says, dedicated to advancing the science and understanding of tornadoes. I asked the question, I said, but are we learning any more about tornadoes? What left is there to learn? And even the stuff we learn, how's it going to help us? Tornadoes, one of the most unpredictable, happen on a moment's notice. They can predict basically the chances or the likelihood or the conditions for it, but them actually forming or touching down, it's a crapshoot. I kind of think guys like Reed Timmer, they're almost more in it for the publicity, and they're like, this is cool, I love this. Gets my blood flowing, my juices going. And when there's devastation like there is in the Fox Valley in Wisconsin, where my friend Butchie lives, luckily for him at least, he was spared any serious damage. But, when you have people getting either killed or injured or losing their homes or businesses or dogs or whatever, to have this one guy doing look at that tornado, it's on the ground. It seems kind of crass. And it doesn't seem like we're learning anything. Now, I'm a child of the movie Twister, the great cinematic classic that is Twister. It was not good. You're kidding, right? Yeah, no, I'm kidding about that. But I remember in Twister, one of the plot devices was they had to get close enough to a tornado to drag a little trailer, which had a capsule full of little metal instrument balls that would get sucked up into the tornado so they could then measure the tornado. All right, so are we still doing that, or is that just in the movie? Are we getting any data? Are we learning what to do? I mean, you can't really mitigate against tornadoes. You can't really stop tornadoes. Like, whoa, what are we doing? But yes, they're more common in the upper Midwest this time of year. In the South, I guess. South in March, April, and May. This one is the more powerful one. Scott, I'll leave his last name out of it. He says, great pod today. Thank you so much for doing what you do. Anyhow, I've got a very, very real and very personal reason to want to watch Fauci be jailed and or executed. Back during the pandemic, I was squarely on Team Zabe. I saw the ridiculousness in forcing three-year-olds at the school where I work being forced to wear masks and prohibited from playing with each other at recess. I rolled my eyes while the blue-haired lady at Barnes & Noble berated me for not wearing a mask. I shook my head as they shut down Montgomery County as people lost their jobs and their social outlets. I despaired as my mom's elderly friend died alone because they would not let outsiders visit their retirement center where she lived. This lady was in her 90s and near death, and yet they would not let her friends see her and say goodbye. Science. Right. Anyhow, the crux of my story is this. Fauci stole my sister, my best friend, my whole family, with the exception of my brother. They all fell hard for Fauci and his science. So when he and his cronies pushed through an untested, dangerous vaccine to fight against what was essentially a cold, my family stood in line to get it. Side note, I remain unvaccinated. Anyhow, my sister was at the time a 52-year-old woman in great shape. She was placing in her age group for 10-mile road races. Her body fat was low. She exercised all the time. Her heart and her health were perfect. She took the vaccine. Not too long afterwards, she had a massive stroke. Today, she cannot work. She cannot walk without assistance. She cannot use her arm. She cannot use the restroom without help. She cannot drive. Her kids were robbed of their mother. My parents were robbed of their daughter. And I was robbed of a sister and a best friend. You, sir, were the voice of reason, and no one listened. Well, I was a voice of skepticism. And I wouldn't say no one listened, but those in charge didn't fucking care. I cannot tell you the heartache that Fauci caused my family, and we are just one family he destroyed in a country of millions. I don't talk about it much. When I see that guy's smug face, though, and I hear about his bank account lined with special interest money, I feel physically ill. I, like you, understand that in this life, he will likely never get his reckoning. The media, the politicians, they have too much to lose to ever admit they were wrong. I'm not very religious, but I hope that he gets his due somehow, some way, even if it is in the afterlife. Anyhow, as you can imagine, I appreciate you doing what you're doing during the pandemic, and I appreciate you still striving to be the voice of reason, or at least skepticism, in a world which has gone so far off the rails, I barely recognize it. Thank you. Regards, Scott, loyal one percenter. Now, you can't prove that the stroke was a result of the vaccine. Strokes can happen to 52-year-olds, but they are quite unlikely in a healthy 52-year-old woman who is running road races. Very unhealthy. And the vaccine represented a wild card. Everyone's body was going to react differently. The chances of her at 52 in good health dying from COVID were so small you could hardly register them. It was only the elderly and the very infirm and the severely overweight. Ironically, they thought early on that smokers would have problems with it because it was a respiratory thing. Turns out that smokers had less of a chance of dying, which is weird. But anyway, you can't prove it. You don't know for sure, but I can understand the rage from a guy like Scott. Well, today, as this podcast drops, is the hearing, and I'll comment on what happens, if anything, tomorrow on the pod. I don't think there'll be much new. I think it'll be like the previous clashes between Rand Paul and Fauci, in which they called each other liars, and Fauci said defiantly, "You don't know what you're talking about." And you know who wins in those arguments? Whoever the mainstream media says won. Because the mainstream media convinces the midwits and the sheep who don't pay attention or just want to be liked and follow along, those of us who are critically thinking have already come to the conclusion that this guy was and is completely full of shit. And with that, we say thank you for listening to the podcast. Rate and review, tell a friend, and I appreciate it as always. If you'd like to subscribe, you get Fridays included, along with the 4 days of you listening to our fine advertisers. But you also get this podcast Monday through Thursday ad-free, so you got that going for you, as well as total consciousness on your deathbed. Thanks for listening. Have a great Wednesday, and we will see you next time. You know what I love about baseball? There's a game every single day. That's not a complaint. That's a gift. And right now you've got playoff basketball and playoff hockey running alongside the everyday of baseball. That's not a sports calendar, my friends. That's a buffet. MyBookie.ag has all of it. And if you're new, here's the deal. Use promo code ZABE on your first deposit. First bet loses, they give you the money back, up to $500 in free play, plus $25 in casino credit just for signing up. One rollover, that's it. MyBookie.ag, promo code ZABE. Check the site for offer details and to confirm availability in your state. Bet smart, get paid. Now, go find a game.